We're continuing this morning in our series of the I am sayings of Jesus, the I am metaphors from John's Gospel, and just by way of review, since it's about once a month that I'm hitting this, just want to tie it all together. Each of these passages in John, they all reveal specific, unique characteristics about Jesus. And they also proclaim his deity. In fact, the first lesson that I started with was focused on, largely from the Old Testament, how the name of God, when it was translated, one way that it was translated was I am. Just stating his very being. We don't know how he came into existence. We just know that he is, that I am. And in a way, when we look at these quotes from Jesus, that they all start with the same I am, and they all give us some idea of a different viewpoint on some of his power. He is, in essence, saying, I am God. And the ones that we've looked at, you may have, perhaps you noticed that I started in John 14 and then went back and started going in order. And I selected John 14, I am the way and the truth and the life, intentionally to do that one first, because to me it makes sense for it to be first. It's... When we studied that, the way and the truth and the life, Jesus was saying he is the access to the Father. He's our avenue of getting to heaven. And if we can understand that from the outset, then we can understand perhaps better some of these other things that Jesus says about himself. He's the way to heaven. He is the truth. If we don't understand that Jesus is truth, then we're not going to understand very much more of what God has to say for us. John chapter 6, I am the bread of life. Jesus here was saying that his words are, if we eat those, we consume those, and we live those. Those are the words of eternal life. John chapter 8, I am the light of the world. It's only because of Jesus shining that we know what direction it is that we need to go. He's the only source of direction and our purpose in life. And then the last one that we covered last month, last year, was a twofer, a two in one. I am the sheep gate and I am the good shepherd. The sheep gate, Jesus is the door to the fold. The only way we can get into the fold is to go through him. And he's also the good shepherd. And in that capacity, he protects his sheep, us, and his sheep know his voice. So what we're looking at this morning is from John chapter 11, where Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Now, one thing that I noticed, we've got life in a couple of these. The very first one from John chapter 14, I am the way, the truth, and the life. How much is this different from that? Well, it's a different connotation, and in a way it's easier to take these as a lump statement instead of one lesson on the way, one lesson on the truth, and one lesson on the life, because the connotation is different. But let's begin here this morning and just reading the text from John chapter 11. We'll begin in verse 1. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble, because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble, because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. So in our context here, there are several things that are noteworthy. The chapter starts with Lazarus is sick. And Lazarus' sisters, Mary and Martha, send notification to Jesus, "Our brother is ill." And it's not overt here in the passage, but it sure seems as if they're getting that word to Jesus so that he can get over there and heal Lazarus. But that's not what Jesus' reaction is. He intentionally delays going there. It tells us that, where is it? Verse 6. After having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. He just hangs out where he is for 2 more days. And then at the end of those 2 days, what does he do? He tells his disciples, he says that Lazarus is asleep, and they don't think that's a big deal. Hey, he'll wake up. But then Jesus tells his disciples, no, Lazarus is dead, and we're still going to go. Now, but what's the point for the delay? Verse 4, what does Jesus say? This illness does not lead to death. Yet it did, right? But it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Jesus intentionally did not go immediately when he was contacted, because he saw this as an opportunity to demonstrate his power, to give God the glory that they can see someone be raised from the dead. And he tells us later, somewhere around verse 12 or 13, that he's going there so that the disciples will believe. And then later on, as he prays to God right just before Lazarus is raised, he prays to God that these people standing here will believe. That was the purpose of waiting, and that was the purpose of raising Lazarus from the dead, and also the whole purpose of God, of John writing his gospel, was so that we may believe. The disciples also present an objection to Jesus. Why are we going to go back to Judea, to Jerusalem, where they just tried to stone you in the previous chapter? When we talked about Jesus being the good shepherd, and some of the comments that Jesus made in John, go back to John chapter 10, verse 31, the Jews took up stones again to stone him. And Jesus winds up leaving. And here, once we get to the next chapter, Mary and Martha send word to Jesus to get him to come back. Okay, his disciples are a little scared for him to return, thinking they were just ready to stone you before. Why are we going to go back? Jesus goes into this discussion about daytime and nighttime and so on. But the point is, Jesus wasn't scared about what his reception was going to be, whether it's from the Jews looking to stone him or Martha and Mary being upset that he took so long to get there. Perhaps it may have even been a week, because he waited 2 days. Then he tells his disciples that Lazarus is dead. By the time he gets there, Lazarus has been in the tomb for 4. I don't know how quickly he went in the tomb after he had died, but it easily could have been a week. Whatever distance Jesus had to travel, had he left immediately, he would have gotten there much more quickly. But one thing is very clear from the context. Number one, it's that Jesus was very close to this family. Mary and Martha had and Lazarus, they all had a relationship with Jesus that they were certainly comfortable getting that message to him to say, we need you here because our brother is sick. And it's also clear that Mary and Martha knew the power that Jesus had. They both make the exact same statement. Martha's is in verse 21. Mary's is in verse 23. They say, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. You can take that a couple different ways. We don't really know we're just reading it. We're not hearing how they said it. Was that an accusatory remark against Jesus? If you'd have gotten here a week earlier, he wouldn't have died. We're upset with you, Jesus. That could have been something that was in their minds. But it also demonstrates, it certainly demonstrates their belief. They knew that he had the power to heal. They had seen it, healing the sick, healing the blind, and so on. And that's clear from the text. What's also clear is Martha's understanding. You know, there are others of the day that didn't believe in the resurrection. But when Jesus questions her, Martha says, I know that he's going to rise again in the resurrection on the last day. That's verse 24. When Martha in verse 21 says to Jesus, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Now really, I don't really know what to make of verse 22. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. It's almost as if Martha thinks that Jesus can raise him from the dead. Yet, they seem so surprised for the rest of the chapter until it happens. Maybe Martha was a step ahead of the others. But she makes that statement, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. Maybe she's asking, thinking, maybe it's not going to happen. Jesus responds, your brother will rise again. And she says in verse 24, yes, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. She's not expecting it, apparently, to happen here. And that's when Jesus makes the statement, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Then Jesus puts her on the spot. Do you believe in me? And Martha's confession here may, I don't know, it may even be stronger than Peter's in Matthew chapter 16. She says, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world. And this is in the context of, do you believe in the resurrection? We're not given a response that Jesus gave to that great confession. We're just told in the next verse that she goes back and calls Mary. Now Jesus wants to talk to Mary. Martha's confessed her belief. Still, it seems that they don't really know what's going to happen. What do you think Martha and Mary knew about resurrection at this point? From what I can, unless I'm overlooking things, there are, I think, 10 accounts of resurrection recorded for us in the Bible. There may have been others that weren't recorded. We don't know. But that's what we have recorded for us. There are three in the Old Testament. One by Elijah, one by Elisha, and one where someone was thrown in next to contacting Elisha's bones, and then this dead man stands up, he's revived. We have three accounts of resurrection in the Old Testament. Those should have been the ones that Mary and Martha definitely knew about. And if I understand the timeline of Jesus' ministry, by the time he gets here to John 11, Jesus has already raised at least two individuals in the Gospel of Luke. I'm getting ahead of myself. That's in another slide. But the Jews knew of resurrections that had happened. Mary and Martha, though, hadn't seen it for themselves. Let's take a look here at verse 25. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. What does that mean? I don't think that's a statement that any of us have ever made about ourselves. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. That's a statement that can be twisted and contorted by a number of religious organizations today. What is Jesus really saying here? How can we die and still live? Well, what did Martha say? I know that he's going to rise again at the last day. If we are believers, we understand that this life, this earthly life, it's merely preparing us for eternity. Or at least it's our opportunity to prepare for eternity. Many are going to squander this opportunity, right? Some view life here on this earth as all that there is. And what's the old lame expression? He who dies with the most toys wins. You don't really win much of anything, though, do you? Now, what Jesus said is, if you believe in me, even though we die a physical death, There's something greater out there. And believing in Jesus means that we've got an opportunity to live. He continues that thought. Whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Well, he just said, though he may die. It can be something that we can get caught up in the language. But these are two different statements. The second one appears to be, if we live in fellowship with God. And what does that mean? Well, that means we're eating the bread of life. We're walking in the light of the world. We're doing the things that God's asked us to do. If we're living in fellowship with God, physical death doesn't separate us from God. If we're in fellowship with God, we're not dying a spiritual death where we're separated from God and separated from God for eternity. What had Jesus done before he gets here to John chapter 11? I think the very reason that Martha and Mary contacted him in the first place, our brother's sick. They knew he had healed the sick. He had healed the blind and the lame. Lord, if you can get over here, you'll make Lazarus better. He'd already raised two people, and I think there's a distinction here between these two accounts. Let's look over in Luke chapter 7. These are both similar circumstances. Luke chapter 11, starting at verse 11. Soon afterwards, he went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. As he approached the gate of the town, a man who had died was being carried out. He was his mother's only son, and she was a widow, and with her was a large crowd from the town. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion for her and said to her, "Do not weep." Then he came forward and touched the bier, and the bearer stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, rise." The dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. The next chapter, we have another account. Luke 8, starting with verse 49. While he was still speaking, someone came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher any longer." Earlier in the text, this man had gone to Jesus and said, "My daughter's sick. Can you come to my house and make her better?" While he is on the way, he gets delayed by another person that's interacting with him. So as he gets tied up with there, here in verse 49, he gets an updated message. Don't pester him anymore. He doesn't need to come to the house. She's died. Verse 50, when Jesus heard this, he replied, "Do not fear, only believe, and she will be saved." When he came to the house, he did not allow anyone to enter with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. They were all weeping and wailing for her, but he said, "Do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and called out, "Child, get up." Her spirit returned, and she got up at once. Then he directed them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astounded, but he ordered them to tell no one what had happened. The distinction that I can see in these two accounts in Luke and the account of raising Lazarus is the time. Here in Luke 8, this girl had just died. Luke chapter 7, I'm not sure how much time had passed, but they were apparently on their way to the funeral or just leaving the funeral or whatever type of funeral service they might have had at that time. He was on his way to be buried. Jesus is right there, present. What did we see in the Old Testament when Elisha and Elijah resurrected people, raised people from the dead with the power of God? And Elisha and Elijah both had to lay hands on the person. Perhaps even one or both of them laid down, I think in Elisha in 2 Kings 4 or 5, tells us his hands are on the child's hands, his mouth on the child's mouth, and so on and so forth. There's physical contact. Here Jesus is present. What happens in John 11? In John 11, we've had a week pass. What does Martha say? "Lord, we don't want to open that door. the smell is going to knock us all down. Jesus doesn't even go into the tomb. He doesn't need to touch the body. He doesn't need to even be physically present. He can just pray and yell into the tomb, "Lazarus, come out." And here he comes, still wrapped up in the burial cloth. I don't know how he's able to walk, but he did. Raising Lazarus from the dead, he's been dead in the tomb at least 4 days. No physical contact. If you're comparing these accounts of resurrection, his is certainly superior to those from the Old Testament. And it's even more impressive than the ones in Luke, I think, if we're in the business of comparing these types of things. But what does this also give us a foretaste of? Jesus is going to raise himself from the dead. And take these step by step from the people at that time. They'd seen him heal people. Okay, that's pretty impressive. But what happened in Luke 8? "Lord, it's too late. Don't even bother coming. She's died." Well, that's okay. He'll still come and he'll raise her from the dead. "Oh, he's been dead a week? No problem. We'll still raise him from the dead." But the Jews seeking to kill him, stone him, that's not a problem. Why? Because he is the resurrection and the life. Death doesn't stop the resurrection and the life. He is the life. And it doesn't matter if the body is physically dead. Jesus proves his deity by coming back. Let's turn to another passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. There's an extensive discussion here from Paul, because among the other problems with the church of Corinth, it seems many did not even believe in a resurrection. Now, I don't know how they can call themselves Christians and not believe in a resurrection if Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life." So therefore, Paul goes through this detailed explanation. We're not going to read the whole chapter or the whole discussion, but let's just look at verse 20 of 1 Corinthians 15. "But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have died. For since death came through a human being, the resurrection of the dead has also come through a human being. For as all die in Adam, so all will be made alive in Christ." Death came through Adam, through sin. The antithesis of that is Jesus coming as a man and bringing life, and bringing resurrection, being made alive in him. If you're of a certain age, you may remember some commercials for Life cereal a few decades ago. I don't remember them in great detail. I just remember Mikey likes it. Apparently they had this fussy little kid that didn't like to eat much of anything, but boy, when they put Life cereal in front of him, whoa, Mikey is eating it. And I never really considered this much, but what better name for a cereal than Life? Death cereal probably wouldn't sell too many boxes. You know? Jesus gives spiritual life or fellowship with God to all who come to him in trusting obedience. That's what it means for him to be the resurrection and the life. And we should like it just like Mikey. Right? What's the reaction in John 11 after Lazarus is raised? You know, the whole chapter is building up. He's waiting so that they may believe. He gets there. He doesn't even make it to Mary Martha's house. They come out and meet him out in the village, or maybe even before he gets to the village. And there he goes straight to the tomb. And who all was there? Mary is followed by this crowd of people because they think she's going to go to the tomb to weep. And as a result, there's a lot of witnesses to this miracle. And what's the result? Well, he did it. Jesus said he did it for so that the disciples may believe, but also for all those present to believe. And we see in John 11, verse 45, many of the Jews, therefore, believed in him. The next verse, but some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what he had done. Even with that evidence right in front of them, there are still some who either chose to discredit it for whatever reason or hated him so much that they went and told the Pharisees. And the same choice is for us today. We can read in the Gospel of John and throughout the New Testament. We can read how Jesus is the resurrection and the life. We can read how Jesus, by trusting in him, by believing in him, by following him, doing the things that he's asked us to do, we can have the life. Or we can choose to put it out of our minds. It seems that the details of John 11, Jesus did everything he could to not allow any objections to what he had done. It's not like Lazarus had passed out. He waited perhaps a week before he got there. He didn't go in and make physical contact with the corpse and doctor it in any way. He did it in front of a bunch of witnesses, out in public, in the light of day. He didn't go in and drag Lazarus out. He calls him out, and Lazarus walks out on his own, wrapped up as he is. What objection could be made to what was witnessed here? The only objection was, well, they didn't like it, or some didn't like it. They didn't like what Jesus was doing, so they sought to kill him. But how can you kill the life? The one who has the power of resurrection. He showed it. And he came back. And in doing so, he gives us hope, just like Martha predicted. There'll be a resurrection on the last day. And at that time, do we want to be partakers in the life? If so, then we need to be followers of Jesus. We need to believe in him like Mary and Martha did, like the people here in John 11 that chose to believe, that saw these things, took them at face value and believed, yeah, he's the Messiah. He's the Son of God. And if we're going to make that, if we're going to believe, then we need to act on that. If Mary and Martha believed but didn't act on it, they would never have sent message to Jesus. Our brother's sick. Can you come? If they believed but didn't act on it, they would not have gone out to meet him and talk to him and say, Lord, if you'd been here, our brother would not have died. If they had believed but not acted, they would not have been involved with him going forward from this day. Belief requires us to follow him. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And those commandments include a great confession like what Martha provides for us here in John 11. And action requires us being baptized for the remission of sins and living for Him. We've got the same choice today. What choice will you make? If you have a need to make that choice or to make things right, please make that choice now as we stand and sing.